You can be lonely anywhere, but there is a particular flavour to the loneliness that comes from living in a city surrounded by millions of people. One might think this state was antithetical to urban living, to the massed presence of other human beings, and yet mere physical proximity is not enough to dispel a sense of internal isolation. It's possible, easy even, to feel desolate and unfrequented in oneself while living cheek by jowl with others. Cities can be lonely places, and in admitting this, we see that loneliness doesn't necessarily require physical solitude, but rather an absence or paucity of connection, closeness, kinship, an inability for one reason or another to find as much intimacy as is desired.
This is writer Olivia Lang. She's just written a beautiful book about urban loneliness called The Lonely City. And her story begins when she moved from England to New York after a painful breakup and discovered just how lonely you can be in a crowd.
I became really fascinated by urban loneliness. I became aware very quickly that I was, although I felt like the only person in the world feeling those feelings, I knew intellectually that I wasn't by any means, that it's a common, in fact, a very common experience. And so I grew increasingly interested in getting to grips with it and understanding how it was working and what it really means.
Mm. Well, take us deeper into that feeling itself, because I think we all kind of know what you mean, but I don't know, bring it alive for us, would you? That feeling of being alone in a city, even though you're surrounded by people.
There are metaphors they keep coming back to, and one is being behind glass and one is being walled up in ice. And these are metaphors that you see in all kinds of different people's writing about loneliness. And I think the reason for that is that the feeling of loneliness is a combination of longing for somebody else, longing for connection, longing for intimacy, longing to be loved, and at the same time feeling hyper-exposed in your solitude, hyper-exposed in your failure to have achieved what our culture considers so incredibly important, a romantic coupleship. And I think that combination for me, the sense of separation, the sense of exclusion, but also the sense of being hyper-visible and ashamed about it, I think those are really the key themes of loneliness, the key notes of it.
What did you do with yourself? You'd moved to New York. You didn't really know anybody.
Well, no, I mean, I did. I had friends in the city. And I think that's important to say as well that, you know, my life was not completely desperately isolated. And I think that's true of many, many people who suffer from loneliness in our society, is that you can have friends, you can have a busy work life, you can even have a partner. It's not necessarily going to stop you longing for that kind of deeper intimacy or deeper sense of being known.
I know exactly what you mean. You've taken me straight back to my junior year in college. I had a summer internship in Alexandria, Virginia, and I had never been there before, and I didn't really know anybody. And I sublet a studio apartment. And the days at work were fine. I mean, I was busy. I was meeting people. But the nights and the weekends, I remember just standing at the window, looking out over the dark city and feeling like the only person alive. Except, of course, I could see other people and lights, but I also remember feeling in some strange way that this feeling might annihilate me, which sounds like such an overstatement, but really it felt like I was just going to, I don't know, splinter, disappear somehow.
Yeah, and I don't think that is an understatement. I think that's another really key thing. I mean, the research on loneliness really shows that we are social beings, and it is absolutely devastatingly emotionally dangerous for us to become that level of isolated. Loneliness has huge physical effects because it is so difficult for a human to live like that. And this is not to say that happy solitude is bad for us. It isn't at all. It's the actual feeling of loneliness that really is the problematic thing.
I liked the point that you made that it's simultaneously a feeling of being invisible, you know, behind glass, cut off from other people, and also being terribly self-conscious, almost as though you've got a, you know, big target on your back that says, you know, alone, loser.
Yeah, God, I felt like that often. And I mean, actually, it was interesting you saying weekends, because I think weekends were so different from in the week. I felt like it was fine to be in cafes on my own or be walking around the city on my own or any of those sort of things. But at weekends, it was like it was family time or it was couple time.
Oh, it's everybody's coupled on the weekend. It's a terrible time to be alone.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I wouldn't go to the places that I normally went to because it would just feel so brutally exposing to just be like, yeah, here I am, a loser.
Yeah, but why? I mean, you've made the point that we all feel loneliness at times. Like, you don't get out of life without experiencing loneliness. So if it's this universal experience, why do we feel so ashamed of it?
The shame is the key thing, I think. And this is what it took me years of wrestling, really, to get to this point of realizing that actually the most painful thing for me about loneliness was the shame. And the shame is unnecessary. It is an absolutely universal experience. I really don't think there are many people in the world who at some point in their life, whether it's because of bereavement, whether it's because of the loss of a friend, any of these things, will experience loneliness. There isn't a need to feel shame. And I think an awful lot of the shame is cultural. And it's appalling, really. It causes so much unnecessary distress. Loneliness is hard enough as it is, but the shame is not a necessary thing to feel.
Yeah, but it's not just that we feel ashamed of it. There is a social stigma attached to loneliness, right? I mean, people will reach out to somebody who's grieving or depressed, but it's as though someone who's lonely has cooties. You don't want to catch it.
I think it gets so deep into our fears of how life could be that we will do anything to ward it off. And part of that is creating a stigma around it.
Yeah, and thinking of all the negative stereotypes we have, you know, crazy cat lady, you know, weird guy who lives in the basement, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And those sort of social stigmas, I mean, the more I sort of looked at that, the more I realized that we're demonizing people who are lonely, we're pushing them away, we're making them more isolated, and it's unkind.
Well, one of the places you went as you began to kind of want to explore the experience of loneliness more and understand it better is you found that there are certain artists you really gravitated to who maybe did more than the psychologist to kind of probe the depths of loneliness. One of the first ones you write about is Edward Hopper, the classic American urban realist. What drew you to Hopper's work?
Hopper was really the gateway for me. I mean, I began this whole different way of looking at loneliness. I wanted to see what a different kind of personality had said about it, a different kind of temperament. And I thought, if anybody, I mean, he's the patron saint of loneliness, really, of the lonely city. And so I started with Nighthawks, which is that exquisite painting I'm sure everyone has seen at one time or another.
But describe it anyway.
It's a diner seen from the outside at night with these four people inside it. And they are in this sort of uneasy grouping. They aren't communicating with each other. There's a very strong sense of how isolating cities can be. But the thing that's particularly interesting to me is that the viewer is trapped behind glass. The viewer is on the other side of this group, this lit up space. And so you get this kind of empathic tremor of loneliness. Looking at it, you get a sense of how it feels to be shut out, to be excluded. And I just thought that was the most fascinating painting.
Did Hopper write much about loneliness and the experience of it?
He talked very interestingly about Nighthawks in particular being just how I saw a city. And the person who was interviewing him at the time was saying, well, are you lonely? Is that how you feel? And he said something really interesting. He said, I probably am a lonely one. And I loved that because while confessing to his own loneliness, he was also making it absolutely clear that he wasn't the only lonely one. There are many, many lonely ones. And this was the point where I realized that the lonely city is a populated place. There are all of these different individuals in his paintings, all experiencing loneliness in different ways.
So there's another artist I wanted to ask you about. You spend a lot of time, kind of immersed yourself in his work, and that's the painter and photographer David Wojnarowicz.
Yeah.
Well, I think I wasn't familiar with him before I picked up your book. Who was he?
Well, I think he's the most wonderful artist. And he has been very underrated and under the radar in America and in England. But he came from a broken home again. He was a street kid in New York in the 60s. And he was gay. And he felt very much violently oppressed and stigmatized. And he spoke up against that. His work speaks up against that. His work is very much about those sort of themes of isolation and resistance, which I think is why I was so deeply drawn to it. So he wrote books, he painted, he took photographs, he made films, he did performances. He's sort of this Renaissance figure of astonishing creativity. And then in the 1980s, he was diagnosed with AIDS, and this is when an AIDS diagnosis was a death sentence. So the final period of his life was really about resisting that, and this is where stigma comes in again. Part of the reason I wanted to write about David and look at David was because so many of the people who get stigmatized, it's around the body, it's around being ugly, it's around being ill, it's around having disabilities. And AIDS is an example of one of those sort of conditions that meant people were staggeringly stigmatized, rejected and isolated by conventional society. So in Close to the Knives, Wernerowicz talks about people dying on hospital trolleys in corridors because nurses wouldn't tend to them. So these are the sort of experiences where you see isolation and loneliness in a totally different light. It becomes something much more political.
Your sense of connection to him and his work in particular was really intense. I mean, while researching that, I mean, you just immersed yourself in his life, his records, diaries.
Yeah.
What did that do for you?
It was absolutely wonderful. I was working in the archive at New York University, which has all of his papers. And one of the things that they had was the taped diaries that he made when he was dying in the last couple of years of his life. And they were astonishingly intimate. So he turned this machine on and he'd just start talking into it in a sort of stream of consciousness way, sometimes very distressed. You can hear where it sounds like he's been crying at some points. But if art does anything, it makes connections between us, it makes connections between strangers, it makes connections between people who will never meet. And that time, you know, where I was having an unhappy time in my life and I was in this archive listening to this person struggling with all these diverse issues, some of which crossed with my own, helped me. It helped me to feel less isolated and less ashamed. It was astonishingly connecting.
Isn't that fascinating that your experience of feeling less lonely happened when you were getting close to somebody who you could never meet?
Yeah, and yet, you know, his voice was speaking in my ear. I mean, one of the things, and actually I ended up reading this quote years after I'd finished that part of the book, but he said to his friend Nan Golden, the photographer, she said, "What do you want from your work?" And he said, "If it makes somebody feel less alienated, that's all I want." So that is what he'd kind of laid out. And I was the recipient of it. I mean, we want connection in all sorts of different ways, don't we? And I think one of the kind of deep ways that we can be touched by another human being is by our art, and that doesn't necessarily involve meeting somebody and touching somebody physically, but you are touching in some sort of way. So I think it does dissolve the glass in a sort of way.
Olivia Lang is the author of The Lonely City: Adventures in the Art of Being Alone.